So, in this last meditation, I asked you at the beginning of the meditation, just cold, jumping right in, to notice how you were feeling, what was going on emotionally for you, or mood-wise. And were any of you surprised by what you discovered? Did you, some any of you not really know how you were feeling until you looked at it? Or you all kind of knew? Anybody want to say something? Your body was feeling? Yes. But you can identify which emotion it was? Or was it mostly energy?
Well, it was calm and relaxed. Mm-hmm. My body was
great. Thank you. Yes. Yeah, there could have been a lot much longer list. So sometimes, you know, it's pretty subtle. Sometimes we can't really tell what it is until we pay a lot of attention. We're pretty quiet. Sometimes we're not used to paying attention to that part of our life. And so some people just don't have the emotional vocabulary or the sensitivity to pay attention to that, to really know. And sometimes it is a kaleidoscope. It's changing a lot. There's an emotion meditation I like doing on the freeway. And that is to notice the subtle shifts of emotions depending on what's happening to the cars around me. You know, a police car pulls up nearby and I feel a certain shift in me emotionally, and then this beautiful car drives up and I feel a certain kind of different feeling, desire a little bit or whatever, and then this car cuts me off and I feel irritated or angry. And actually, I find there's a whole kaleidoscope of feelings that kind of move through me as I'm driving. It's very interesting to watch the subtle shifts. There might be some overarching emotion I'm feeling, but it's also interesting to watch the kaleidoscope of change. And sometimes you can notice a lot in a very short time. Someone else? Anything you noticed in doing that, just jumping into your mood or emotion at the beginning?
Actually had tons of emotions today, and I thought they would crop up during the meditation, but they actually subsided, and I couldn't bring them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it felt very peaceful and calm. Yeah.
So he had tons of emotions during the day today, and he thought they would just all be there when he meditated, but he was surprised when he meditated, he felt quite peaceful, and they weren't there. And it can happen that way. So then at the end of the meditation, I asked you to go back to the emotions, to tune into what was going on mood-wise or emotional-wise, and maybe to feel it in your body. And did any of you do that? What was that like for some of you to do that, to bring that calm, deliberate attention to that emotional part of your life? Were you all so calm and even and nothing was going on? Or what was it like, some of you? Please. Please.
During the breath, I felt good when I could keep going with it, but with distractions or a cough, I would think about that for a moment and then try to find my way back.
Okay. So it was easy to lose track of the breath because something else caught your attention. That's normal. Yes?
What can you say about sleep? I mean, because I was really sleepy.
Yeah.
And so...
there's a lot to be said about sleep in meditation. One is that it's been reported that many Americans are sleep deprived. And probably many Americans need sleep more than they need meditation. So we have to look at that, you know. The other thing is that you know, in terms of meditating, you might choose a time of day where you're most likely to be alert rather than a sleepy time. Like for some people, this evening time is really sleepy time for them. It's a hard time to meditate. When you are sleepy in meditation, there's a number of things you can do. One thing you could do is sit up straight. Like I saw, you're kind of, it looks like you're leaning against the backrest. That's a setup, you know, because, you know, to fall asleep. It's much easier to, you know, to stay alert if you actually hold yourself up and sit up straighter, actually, when you're tired. Put some energy in your posture. If you are, you can also open your eyes when you're sleepy. You gotta keep your eyes down if you'd like, so you don't get caught by the objects around in the room, but just keep your eyes down. If the eyes are open, sometimes it's easier to stay alert and be present. Sometimes when you're sleepy, it's possible to apply more mental effort, more energy in meditation to pay attention. Just arousing the mental energy, it's possible sometimes to stay awake. Another interesting thing to do with mindfulness practice is to do mindfulness of the body around sleep. So, you know, the basic idea of mindfulness is to pay attention to what's happening. And if what's happening is you're sleepy, then pay attention to that. Feel what's like in your eyes and your cheeks and your shoulders, and you know, you feel the kind of the sludge mind happening, and just really kind of explore it. Bring your mindfulness to it. Then you're doing the practice, and sleepiness is just as valid as an object for mindfulness as anything else. The other thing, a few other things you've said about sleepiness. One is that many people associate meditation with becoming calm, and they think that's what meditation is all about, becoming calm. And so they're pushing the calm factor as they meditate. Sometimes they're soothing themselves with a breath and trying to, you know, get calm. And there's nothing wrong with that. A lot of people do need to relax a little bit. But if that's all you're doing, you only think meditation is by getting calm, then especially if you're a little bit sleepy, you're kind of pushing yourself into kind of a stupor or into kind of an unuseful place. So you don't want to push the calm factor too much. What we want to do in meditation, have calm, certainly, but in balance with alertness. Calm, alert, alert, calm is the goal, not just calm. Sometimes sleepiness in meditation is because there's many reasons for it, but one very interesting one for some that happens sometimes is some of you probably have seen a very young baby, like a newborn or baby, who goes into an environment where it gets overly stimulated, like a party or something, or store or something. Just a lot of stimulus, and it seems like the protective mechanism of the baby is to fall asleep. Well, adults seem to have that capacity also when they're about to get overstimulated emotionally. And sometimes there might be very strong memories or strong emotions or strong feelings that people don't really want to look at. And they begin cropping up. Meditation often is a great time when things crop up, because as we relax in meditation, the surface lid on the mind gets kind of taken off. The surface chatter, which keeps us distracted from what's really going on, settles down, and deeper stuff can bubble up, the beautiful and the ugly. And sometimes we don't want to look at that. We don't want to look at the beauty. We don't want to look at the ugly. And sometimes we just fall asleep instead as a protection. So that's happening. It's very helpful. I think it's very useful or appropriate to be respectful of that. Don't feel that's a mistake or a problem, or you're doing something wrong if you're falling asleep that way. But to actually take it, there's some wisdom that knows maybe you're not ready, and keep doing the meditation, but just be patient, with how it's going. So the basic idea in mindfulness is to pay attention to what's happening. And the big trick is that many times we're not paying attention to what's happening. We're thinking about the future or the past or fantasizing or just lost in our thoughts. So the first thing is just to learn how to be in the present moment. And the focusing on the breath, for many people, is a very helpful thing to do, that to help us bring us into the present moment. Because the breath is always in the present moment. And staying with the breath is a training of learning how to be in the present moment. But we don't want to only stay with the breath, because it's only a very limited part of human life. We want to learn how to bring attention, wise attention, to all aspects of our lives. So we pay attention to what's happening, but more specifically we say we pay attention to whatever is predominant, whatever is the most compelling thing in the present moment. So we certainly give some emphasis to the breath in meditation, but then if physical sensations in our body become compelling or more predominant than the breath, we let go of the breath, and we pay attention to those physical sensations. If there are sounds in the environment, we don't think of sounds, in our meditation practice, we don't think of sounds as distractions. Sounds are just something else to pay attention to. So if there's a strong sound, it's more compelling than the breath. We let go of the breath again, and we do a listening meditation. Hearing, hearing, the cars go by, hearing, hearing, the dog barks, hearing, hearing. And we just take that in a calm, deliberate, meditative way. Just that's where the meditation is at that time. One of the principles of this meditation practice is that there actually is no such thing as a distraction. Isn't that great? I love it. There's no distractions. You can't be distracted. There's just something else to pay attention to, something else that's not compelling or strong. So if it's strong physical sensations, we bring our attention there. If it's strong sounds, we bring our attention there. Now, if there's compelling emotions going on, if the emotions are really quiet and subtle, you don't have to pay attention to it. Just stay with the breath. But if the emotions are strong and compelling, predominant, make it difficult for you to stay with the breath, then the instructions for this meditation practice is to let go of the breath as your focus, and then bring your calm, deliberate attention to the what's happening emotionally. Being present, be present for that. Okay, I'm angry. That's what's happening. Let me be present for that. Oh, I'm happy. Let me be present for that. I'm afraid. Let me be present for that. I'm depressed. Okay, let me be present for that. What's it like to be present for depression? What's it like to be present for depression, but have that calm, deliberate awareness, which is not caught by the depression, the feelings and the states? What's that like? And so we bring our attention to these things in order to be present for it. As we're present for it, there's a number of helpful skills or ways of being with emotions, strong emotions. One of the ways is to, well, let me say it this way. The first thing is very helpful to do is simply to recognize you're having an emotion. And it's not always easy to recognize you're having it. When I was younger, I was a person whose self-image was that I don't get angry. Watch out for a person like that. And it was a big deal for me to begin to notice and recognize and admit that I was angry. And sometimes I didn't admit it, you know, until, you know, I went down fighting, you know. I kind of reached rock bottom. Like nothing else I could do but say, like, that's what's happening. I'm furious. You know, and it's kind of crazy, but that's, you know, it was a big deal for me to learn to recognize it. And it's very hard for some people to really recognize their emotions. Some people are emotionally illiterate, and it takes a while to learn the emotional vocabulary and learn to recognize emotions. So first thing is just to recognize it. It's great value. This is what's going on. The second thing to practice around emotions is acceptance. Acceptance doesn't mean that it has to stay there. Acceptance means that you're not going to be in conflict with it. You're not going to be criticizing it or judging it negatively or positively or contracting around it or trying to push it away. But you're allowing it to just kind of be there fully and freely. Give you permission to be there. So it just kind of flows through you. Not to be in a reactive mode towards it. So accepting it, recognizing it, accepting it. And then naming it is very, very important, very helpful. Emotions are kind of a very unusual aspect or a very particular aspect of our inner life that sometimes are kind of explained almost by folklore or myths. There's the stories of if you name the dragon loses its power. If you name your emotion, a certain kind of power that emotion has over you will be freed. The power of identification, the power of being entangled with it. So sometimes if you very calmly and deliberately name it, oh, I am feeling X. That's what's really happening. Calm, deliberate, clearly acknowledging this is what's happening. There can be sometimes a kind of little bit of a separation from it, a little disentangling from it, unknotting from it, that it's very freeing, that gives it some of the power away from it, takes some of the power away from it, the unhealthy power. So to just name, oh, I am sad. I am happy. I'm depressed. I'm elated. You know, whatever it might be, just name what it is. And sometimes people say, well, I'm really happy. I don't want to name that, right? Because what's wrong with being happy? Nothing's wrong with being happy. However, there's something really fantastic when we learn how to be free of the happiness. But we want to indulge in it, right? We want to lean into it and be entangled in it. The whole movement here is learning how to be disentangled. And then actually our life moves through us much more beautifully and freer. So even something like happiness, you want to learn how to be disentangled from that. And naming it is one of those ways. And sometimes when you name something precisely, kind of precisely, it also is a kind of freeing movement. I remember once many years ago, feeling lousy. And I just, you know, kind of off some way. And I laid down to feel myself and be present for what was going on. And I could feel my chest was extended. And in an exhale, my chest wouldn't let go all the way, like it normally would be if I exhaled. It was kind of, and I just stayed and felt the bodily feeling of being tight and tense in my chest and not being able to relax fully there. And then I realized I was depressed. And I said, oh, it's depression. And so as soon as I named the depression, the chest relaxed. There's something about naming it that sometimes can be very freeing. So we name. And we're very helpful. And also the naming has this function, as I talked earlier, that we label, if you kind of keep doing it, it's a way of encouraging your mind, your attention to stay there. Pay attention to this. This is something you should pay attention to. Don't get caught in your thoughts and your ideas, but don't be pulled away by something else. Let's just stay here and really feel this. And by very calmly and deliberately in a repetitive way, say, you know, depressed, 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 or sad, or happy, happy, whatever, calm, calm. That little, it's kind of like a little push. Stay there and feel this. Stay there and be present for this. Be with it. And so you can recognize it is important. Accepting it is important. Naming it is important. And the last one is feel it in your body. All emotions will have an emotion, have a physical manifestation. If sometimes it's very subtle, the physical manifestation, but it's always there. In fact, you probably wouldn't even know what emotion you were having unless there was a physical sensation that went with it. So, you know, classically, you know, fear might be, you know, a tightness in the stomach, or rage might be a ball in the stomach, or, you know, there might be anxiety that's held in the jaws, or in the eyes, or, you know, all kinds of different places where you might hold an emotion. Drop into your body and feel what the emotion is like in your body, energetically, physically, in the muscles, whatever's going on. And that has a couple of very important functions. One is, it is what's happening. It is an aspect of the emotion, so you are being present for it. Sometimes, and the physical manifestation of an emotion is not a story. It's just an event. It's something happening. There's a very strong tendency for us, when we're having an emotion, to get caught up in the story around it. And for many times, the reason we're having an emotion, especially negative or problematic emotions, is we have a story that goes with it. We're sitting here minding our own business with our breath. It's very nice. And then some car drives by that has a certain kind of sound. And that sounds just like the car my prom date took me on. And that was my worst experience of my life. And how could that guy or gal, you know, done what she did? And you find yourself filling with rage. And, you know, the rage was born because you had a story about, his memory of what happened a long time ago. Once I was on retreat, teaching retreat, and we had this beautiful morning, beautiful, peaceful morning on the retreat, very still. It was like, I don't know, the eighth day of the retreat. People were very peaceful and calm. And we had this great, it was felt like everyone was really settled in meditation, that one sitting. And after that sitting, I had an interview with this student who was going to come and talk about her meditation with me. And this was a woman who was very troubled, and was very troubled in many different ways, and always came and talked about her great troubles and her this story and that story and everything. And she came in to interview, and in fact, she was had gotten really peaceful at sitting, also in meditation. And for a while, we just sat there and looked at each other. There was nothing to talk about. You know, we were just peaceful, calm, very happy. And you could tell that there's something had happened to her. She was really different. And so eventually she told me, yeah, I'm feeling really peaceful and calm. And I felt so happy for her. And then she said, oh, but it wasn't this way yesterday. Yesterday I was concerned about this. And this was, you know, in this thought. And as she was telling about yesterday, you could see her body and her face and everything just kind of change and morph into a whole different troubled person again. Who cared about yesterday? I couldn't care less about yesterday. This wonderful thing was happening in the present moment. There was a story about yesterday, you know, memory that she was reenacting and living in, and those emotions came from it. Sometimes the story that we have around an emotion is, uh-oh, I'm not supposed to be having this. This is terrible. This is I'm a failure as a human being. This shouldn't be. That's a story, right? And we're adding a second arrow. Or another story is, this is great. This is the best. I have it made. You know, I must be God's gift to Buddhism. You know. Yeah. You know, it's a story. And then you feel elated, you feel proud. And I've done that. I've had, you know, some nice emotions and feelings and experiences in meditation and made a story about, this is great. I have it made. You know, just, now I really understand how it all is and I know how to practice. I'll never be depressed again. I'll never be. You know, and then an hour later or a day later, I crash or something else happens. So I made a story. Story making is a beautiful part of the human mind. We're creative. But unfortunately, many of us are like that great Chinese painter who was painting a ferocious tiger. Very realistically, they are painting this tiger. And then step back to get a full picture of the tiger that he'd just painted. And got afraid and ran away. Forgetting that it was just a painting. So we forget that it's just stories, you know, ideas. And so we get caught up in this world. So we make stories about our emotions. We have emotions because of our stories, you know, and just the whole world. So if we can drop that into our body and feel the emotion physically, the physical sensation in your body is not a story. And it's a way of being present for emotions without being caught easily into the story. Now, as we learn to be present for an emotion, as it is, giving permission to be there, just be there with the emotion as it actually is, and sustain the attention with the emotion, usually something interesting will happen. The word emotion comes from Latin, and motion means motion, movement, and E, the pref, what?
Energy.
Motion means energy?
Energy and motion.
Energy means in Latin?
No, I think emotion means energy and motion.
Does it? Maybe. The prefix, as I understand it, means out. It means a prefix for out. So it's moving out. Moving out, we're moving out. Emotions are not things. Emotions are processes. Emotions are not solid events. They're things that are in process unless we freeze them. Resentment is frozen anger. And only Charlie Brown talks about good grief. But I guess bad grief is frozen grief. And there's ways in which our thoughts, our story making, our attachments, our holding, our reactions can sometimes freeze our emotions. But we don't freeze them, if we don't hold them, they're all in their processes. The processes that arise because of causes and conditions. And once they're there, those processes have to see their way through. Like a grief process has a process. We talk about the grief process. And we have to respect that process. Anger has a process. Happiness has a process. They're all processes that are moving through us. And so when we can bring this non-reactive awareness to our emotions, just to feel it and be with it as it is, get out of the way in a sense, then we can allow that process to move through us as it's meant to go through us. Now, what does that mean, as it's meant to move through us? We don't know. No one knows. It's better not to know. But just let it take its course. Sometimes you feel irritated, and you're present for the irritation, and the movement it takes, the course it takes, is it becomes rage. That's the way it needs to go. And you sit with that. Sometimes you sit with irritation, and it relaxes, and it dissipates into bliss. That's the way it goes that day. Your job is not to prefer. In meditation, you're not supposed to prefer anything. In mindfulness meditation, you're just supposed to be present for how it is. Trusting awareness, trusting attention, trusting presence. It's enough just to be present and let things go, let things be as they are. So with emotions, when they're predominant, we want to respect them, we have a place for them in the practice, we connect to them, we recognize it, we name it, we accept it, we feel it in the body, and we let it kind of take its course, tracking it, being present, noticing how it changes as it changes. If it doesn't change, if it stays frozen, that your job is not to care, in a sense. Your job is, okay, I'll just keep being present for that, be with that, explore it different ways, feel it different ways. The emphasis here in this practice is always pay attention. Just pay attention. Now to this, now to this, now to this. Pay attention. What you'll notice as you do that is that there's a tremendous tendency in the human mind to prefer, to want to fix, to get away, to change, to hold on, to do different, have different ways of reacting and responding to what's going on. We want to just keep coming back to paying attention, noticing what's happening, noticing what's happening. It's in that paying of attention that Buddhism says we can discover our freedom. So, I've talked a lot. I apologize. Now it's your turn. Do you want to ask for clarification or ask anything about this so far, about today, or anything in this course so far about the practice? Comments? Yes.
How do we draw the line between the sort of discipline of sitting straight and keeping your eyes closed and what is, you know, severely uncomfortable of, you know, that your legs falling asleep or that you should be, you know, you should sit up straighter or you should do something else, that the physicality of the meditation, how did that be perfect?
So your question is saying, what happens, I'm sitting here meditating and after a while I have intense pain?
Well, not intense, but enough to be
distracting. Enough to be distracting. So pain in your knee, for example.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So when you have strong sensations in your body, like painful sensations or pleasant ones, the practice is to make that your meditation. So then you let go of the breath and you put your attention in that knee. You just really feel that, be present for that. And as you do that, discover what it's like to maintain calm, deliberate attention there. Maybe name it quietly so you can stay there, so your mind doesn't wander away so easily, doesn't float away. Just stay there. And as you do that, you might learn a lot about yourself. You might learn all the ways in which you react and judge and get afraid and get concerned and get tight. And, you know, you might learn a lot of things, all those second arrows you might add to that. And as you learn that, the second and third and fourth arrows, that's a very important part of the process, to see all that. And then eventually you'll learn not to be caught by those second arrows or not to add them or just let the pain be pain. And it's possible to have very intense pain and be completely at peace. Not only at peace, it's possible to have a very intense pain and feel happy and joyful. The feeling pain is not the requirement for feeling bad or terrible or, you know. And so some people then will choose, when there's discomfort, physical discomfort in their body, is to stay there and use that as a meditation practice. Now, you have to have some wisdom about that. Certainly, if you think you're damaging yourself, then you should change your posture. Please. Sometimes if you feel like you're getting so discouraged or being snowed under by the intensity of it, maybe it's better to change your posture or get out of it. Because, you know, if you're encouraged and you feel it's useful and you feel, you know, the strength to stay with it, it's possible to stay with very intense physical pain. And it's very, very, very powerful form of meditation practice. Now, some people hear that and they say, well, why should I do that? Why should I be present for pain? It's your choice, you don't have to. But one of the reasons, from a Buddhist point of view, is that if you're only free when things are comfortable, you're not really free. And to learn how to be free, to learn how to have calm, deliberate attention, to be present for uncomfortable things, provides a is a very, very helpful quality to have. It builds character. It builds all kinds of inner strength. It builds capacity to be non-reactive. Sooner or later, I guarantee it, sooner or later, in normal life, you're going to find yourself in a situation that's uncomfortable, that you have no choice but to be present for. And if you don't know about yourself, know about your reactions, your response, if you haven't developed your character so you have the ability to stay present and aware for what's going on, you might end up causing problems for yourself. You'll punch the guy out, then later regret it, or whatever, right? So in meditation practice, it's actually a very good laboratory, it's a very good gym, to learn to exercise and stretch yourself and learn about yourself and learn what it's like to learn to discover a kind of calm presence that's not caught by discomfort, not reactive to it. Just learn how to be peaceful with that too, or equanimous with that too. So if you have a sense of that possibility and the value of it, then you might feel, oh, this is good. I want to do this. Okay, this is my chance to learn this aspect of my life. If you don't see that as a useful possibility, if you feel, look, I know enough about how to be present non-reactively to uncomfortable situations, then by all means, change your posture. If you don't need to learn it. But if you're getting discouraged, you know, meditation should be something that you want to do. You find it's valuable to do, inspiring to do, helpful to do for you. So if the strong sensations, strong emotions are making it very challenging and discouraging to do the meditation practice, then switch how you're doing it or come talk to a teacher or, you know, learn something. Take it in small dosages. Yes?
It was recognize, accept, name, and what was the F one?
Recognize, accept, name, and feel. Yeah. Feel in the body. That's what. Or actually, what I used to say when I did enter class, I said, recognize, accept, name, and explore. Explore it. And explore meant explore it in your body. Explore what it's like. So investigate. Investigate's good. But investigate in your body. Some teachers like to use the acronym RAIN. Recognize, accept, investigate. And then they like, rather than naming, they sometimes say non-identification. Learn not to identify with it. Don't take it personally. Yes?
I was having a lot of frustration. I've been doing laying down meditation, and as the lady was saying, then I fall asleep.
Yeah.
So I tried to figure out a way of sitting that my knees would be comfortable, and I was still sleepy. And instead of accepting that, I spent the whole time, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
I'm going to stay awake. And I felt myself nodding off. And just before you rang the bell, I opened my eyes and became alert. And instead of saying, oh, great, well, maybe that'll work next time, I started slinging arrows. Why didn't you do that sooner? So it was really frustrating.
Yeah. So yes, it can be very frustrating to notice these kinds of things. And then but the fascinating thing about this, it's like kind of like a trick almost. It's like kind of like it's almost tantalizing or something, that the frustration around doing the practice becomes the meditation. You just turn your attention. Oh, I'm frustrated about meditation. Okay, that's what I need to meditate on now. The frustration. Okay, this is what it's like to be frustrated with meditation. There's nothing outside of the practice. The idea is everything gets included. Everything gets composted. Everything gets included within it. And part of the trick in practice is to learn how to include everything. And sometimes you'll find there's a little stage director, you know, you want to have everything on the stage, but you'll find there's a little stage director off stage that's directing the show. And sometimes it's hard to notice the stage director, but the idea is to bring the stage director back up on the stage. Which reminds me of another little story. Maybe it relates to emotions and all this, if I may tell a little story. And I'll take your question. Can I?
Oh.
Yeah. And that is, there's a American mythic tale of a girl named Dorothy that goes to this city called Oz. And they go into this great chamber where the great wizard of Oz is. And he's, you know, he's a big mask on the wall, right? Booming voice. And then her little dog kind of goes and pulls the curtain and unmasks the wizard. Just this little plump little guy behind the curtain. You remember that? And then doesn't he say something like, oh, just ignore me? What? What?
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
So meditation practice, one way of understanding it is at times, and there's 20 different aspects of meditation what happens, but at times it's like pulling the curtain to really see what's going on there. And sometimes the message you get is, don't pay attention here. But the idea is to pay everything. We pay attention to everything. That's the idea. There's nothing which is not acceptable. And then it's very powerful. It's a phenomenally powerful thing to learn how to be present for anything that arises in life. And when the sense of that power is that then you can be present for uncomfortable things. And it's so helpful for everyone concerned. If you can be, you know how to be present for discomfort rather than reactive to discomfort. You can have different conversations with people then. So please.
I just have two questions, one about negative emotions, one about positive emotions. So the one about, so I guess I noticed in myself feeling a negative emotion, but also noticed, I think, a kind of effort to hold on to it. And it's a puzzling thing why people would want to hold on to painful or negative emotions. And I was just wondering if you had comments about that.
Oh, it's common.
What?
It's common, yeah.
Right. I mean, it seems to be common, but there's something sort of counterintuitive about that. The other question was that you mentioned that it's important to distance ourselves from even positive emotions like happiness, or in some sense distance ourselves. And I guess I was wondering if you could elaborate more on that. Why? Why not? Why not be really close to happiness?
Well, the idea is not to be entangled, because entangled is a setup. If you're entangled with happiness, it's a setup to feel unhappy. If you're attached to your happiness, you'll feel unhappy, because happiness is an ephemeral thing; it comes and goes. And there's the happiness, and what you bring to that to be entangled with it is often things like ego, identity. Stories and all kinds of other things. And so if you stay entangled with even happiness, you don't have a chance to become free of all those things, to see all those things. And now becoming disentangled doesn't mean at all we become aloof. Oddly enough, the more disentangled you are, the more fully you'll feel all of everything. Even though it might feel good to be somehow entangled with the happiness, happiness is actually felt in a much more beautiful way when we're not entangled with it. When we're a little bit, I don't want to say removed from it, because we don't really get removed from it, but when we're kind of independent of it. So I don't know if that's helpful. Is it what I'm saying? So is it responding to your concern? You think about it? That's a good answer. So for example, there's many reasons to be happy, right? I mean, if I'm happy because I just won the California lottery, I mean, it's, you know, there's a lot of different ideas that get entangled with being happy about winning the lottery. And I've heard a lot of stories about people who ended up being miserable after winning lotteries. And, you know, so, you know, if you guys give me, you know, if you guys feel sorry for me, right, and decide to buy me a Maserati, there's a Maserati store down the street now, I know, right? You know, a red one would be very nice, you know, a convertible. And I mean, I'd be so happy and delighted, and I'd finally really, it'd be obvious to everyone who I really am then. You know, my macho self, and I'd just be delighted and so happy to finally kind of be able to exhibit to the world my true nature. But then someone scratches the side of it, you know, or bumps it, and then I'm just devastated. And I have to leave it in the shop, you know, for a few days, and they give me a beat-up old Volkswagen, you know, and then I feel awful, and I'm like, you know, who am I, my identity, and, you know, and people are going to look funny at me. And I mean, all those things are ridiculous, right? So what does it mean to be entangled with our happiness? What kind of happiness are we, what are the values, what are the attachments, what are the ideas we have? And those are kind of ridiculous examples, but there are, you know, there are things that might not seem so ridiculous when in one stage of life, that in other stage of life you wonder, why was I so caught by that? You get a promotion and you're so happy. 40 years later you say, what was that about? Or you're so happy with this partner you found. You're so delighted with this partner. This is like, you know, the best thing, you know. And 40 years later, what was that about? You know.
4 months later.
4 months later. You know, some happinesses are quite beautiful and innocent and pure and wonderful, and some happinesses, you know, so much goes into making us happy. It's helpful to look at that and really see what's going on. A reflective life. We really look at our life honestly, be present for what's there, and really understand it in some deep way to plummet to the depths of who we are. So last one, please. Well, you know, enjoyment can be multifaceted. There are simple, immediate kind of enjoyments of enjoying the sunset or enjoying a person. It's very simple and easy. And then there's enjoyments that have to do with, you know, very complicated evaluations of it. You know, I really enjoy that Maserati because what it does to my public image. You know, so enjoyment also is, you have to kind of look more carefully. What do you mean by enjoyment? What's the thing that you're enjoying? And enjoyment is great. I mean, your capacity for joy and happiness will increase as you become freer, will increase as you learn how to be more present. In a sense, the one of the goals of meditation practice is to allow you to have a happier life. That's part of the goal. So, but oddly enough, you become happier by being less entangled, even in happiness and enjoyment. Now, deep meditation practice requires enjoyment. It requires joy. You won't go really deep in meditation practice unless you're feeling a joy as part of the practice, joy and happiness. So, joy and happiness are essential elements of the Buddhist path. So we don't want to, you know, there's a place for them, a very important place for them. But that joy and happiness, hopefully, doesn't come at the expense of being attached to them or entangled with them. So, you know, there's this thing of being the non-reactive awareness and presence that I'm trying to teach you. I'm not trying to be a party pooper. You know, it's a vehicle, it's a way of actually experiencing life in a much more richer and happier way. And I might add, one of the really great emotional qualities, one of the really precious emotional qualities that comes from non-reactive presence, at least a lot of people report this, is the calm, present, non-reactive, really fully present for what's there, is compassion. To feel compassion. And compassion is one of the most precious emotions we can. Compassion, loving kindness, sympathetic joy are really important qualities. The world needs it. So, I hope this was clear enough. I hope it gave you enough to go with for the next week. Now, you can expand the practice to include your emotions as they become predominant in your meditation practice. Is a handout out there? So there is a handout, and I think I scared people away from taking them because we end up with the extra after each evening. But so please take some. There's the instructions on emotions are in the handout for today, so you get it there written form. There's some more discussion about it, and there's some exercises you can do around emotions and during the week. And if for some reason we do run out, those handouts are also found at IMC's website. And thank you. And next week, we'll finally get to thinking. I know it's been hard not to think all this time. But one more week of non-thinking, and the next week, you'll have to think some more. Thank you.